We have the governor who has requested time to present and discuss some proposals. Governor Kitzhaber, welcome. First of all, I have to ask everybody to either be seated or you have to leave the room. There is a maximum capacity on the room, and so we do not want a bunch of people standing in the aisles. So either find a seat or you have to exit to another room. And the second thing is, if you have electronic devices, phones, beepers, or anything else, please turn them off or remove them or throw them away so as not to interrupt the governor. Governor, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, John Kitzhaber, governor of the state of Oregon. I want to thank you and the leadership for giving me the opportunity this afternoon to present my legislative concepts. We have some individuals from the business community and other interest groups who have welcomed this opportunity as well, and we appreciate that. In the end, you will make the decision on how to dispose of these, but we do think that it's very important to have an opportunity to air them publicly. I'll be very brief. I've got members of my staff here if you have any technical questions. The first proposal is the Oregon Transportation Investment Act of 2002, which seeks to build on the excellent strategy and policy of the last legislative session, which, as you know, bonded $400 million in highway bonds that were backed by a slight increase in vehicle title fees. Earlier this month, the Oregon Transportation Commission allocated that $400 million in the form of over 130 badly needed highway and bridge projects around the state. I'm suggesting that we build on that by increasing the auto registration fee by $15 a year. Oregon is currently 50th. We have the lowest vehicle registration fee in the country. A $15 increase would still leave us at 45th. This would generate over $75 million a year. The proposal would give half of this to cities and counties to deal with their immediate transportation needs and use the other half to bond $350 million of highway bonds. I'm also proposing that we would capture a portion, less than half, of the $80 million that flows from the Highway Trust Fund for bridge repair and bond another $400 million. At the end of the day, this would be $750 million for investment in highway and bridge projects, creating 2,500 well-paying jobs. This is real economic development that can have a benefit this biennium, and I'm sure you've been following the series in the Oregonian about the desperate need of our bridges. Bridge repair work can be done immediately, and there are no right-of-way issues, and this gives us an opportunity to get on top of this and maintain our critical transportation infrastructure, which is one of the underpinnings of a healthy economy. As you know, I also have three tax proposals to help finance the deficit. The first of these is a 30-cent per pack increase in the cigarette tax. We may want to increase that to 50 cents, given the potential of an additional $100 million shortfall in March. This would be dedicated to financing health care programs. Currently, our tax in Oregon is lower than that in both Washington and California, and it's also well documented that increases in tobacco tax reduce the number of young people that start smoking in the first place. The second proposal is a 5 cent per drink beer and wine tax that would generate $42 million. Oregon is the 50th in the nation in terms of total revenue derived from beer and wine taxes. That would include a sales tax that is charged in, say, California or Washington. We've not raised the beer tax since 1977 or the wine tax since 1983. We had some concerns raised by a number of Oregon brewers that are attempting to become 100,000 barrel brewers, and we had an exemption for those under 100,000 barrels, a thoughtful letter from the folks who run Widmere, Full Sail, and Deschutes Brewery. The recommendation is to increase the exemption to 200,000 barrels, which would then have this tax paid primarily by Coors, Busch, Miller, and Pabst. There would be a positive benefit for Oregon brewers such as Full Sail or Widmere. The third proposal it concerns ballot measure 88, which, as you know, was a tax reduction referred by the last legislature and passed in the November 2000 election. It increases the amount of federal tax that can be deducted from Oregon taxable income from $3,000 to $5,000. It benefits primarily those at the upper end of the income scale. Two-thirds of Oregonians receive no benefit from this. I had initially suggested that we repeal this, but I think it may be more prudent and politically feasible to simply delay the implementation for 4 years, which would give us the resources to help balance this budget, as well as the benefits in 2003-2005 to reduce the out-year deficit. And this would allow the 2005 legislature to make a decision about whether or not to reinstate the tax. The final proposal involves creating a education stabilization fund. As you know, ballot measure 5 shifted the vast bulk of responsibility for funding our primary and secondary school system from the property tax, which is very stable during a recession, to the income tax, which is very volatile. I'm suggesting then two constitutional amendments to create and capitalize a school stabilization fund. One would use the education endowment fund as a vehicle for the stabilization fund that currently receives 15% of lottery revenues. In addition, excess lottery revenues above $600 million in the future and a 1% real estate transfer tax exempting the first $100,000 of value. Access to this fund would require a 3/5 vote of the legislature and a referral to the voters. It could only be used in an economic downturn and then only to maintain current program levels. These three funding mechanisms would generate $230 million for the fund in the next biennium and about $500 million by the end of the 2005-2007 biennium. I know that there are some legitimate concerns that have been expressed about the use of a real estate transfer tax, and I'm very open to other alternatives. I think the bottom line, though, is if we're going to create a stabilization fund, we need to create some mechanism to capitalize it if it's going to be available for us in the future. Those are the brief overviews of these proposals, so Mr. Chair, and again, I appreciate the opportunity that you have afforded us to provide some public input into these measures.
Okay, thank you, Governor. Are there questions of committee members? Not. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
I'm going to go down the list here of people who have signed up to testify, and we'd like to keep your comments as brief as possible so we can move on to our agenda items we have yet to do today. George Pasador, Multnomah County.
Mr. Chair, we actually have two other gentlemen that could come up with George in order to shorten your time.
All right. Would you please identify yourself for the record?
My name is George Pasador, and I am a resident of Multnomah County. For the record, I am here today as a private citizen and appreciate the privilege to be able to participate in the governing process of our state. I am also the president of Wells Fargo Bank and the chair of the Portland Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce. I serve on the Federal Reserve Board, and I am the president of the TriMet Transportation System. I have a very real interest in the issues that each of you are forced to deal with as we come to this special session, and I very briefly would like to offer all of my support for what you're having to do and go through. And I also find that I am in general agreement with most of the proposals that have been submitted by the governor. I believe that there's a price for livability. Livability is the mantra of this state. Livability requires continuous investment, and I am a proponent of seeking expense reductions wherever they can be found and efficiencies that can bring about a better government. And at the same time, I'm not at all opposed to seeing revenue generated from sources that make good sense from my point of view. I believe that the proposals as submitted by the governor in the areas of revenue generation, with the exception of the real estate transfer tax, which I am not in favor of, make good sense. It seems that we have an opportunity when we have fees that are consistent with all other states in our nation, and that the level of the fees for this state falls significantly below what we would find in other states, that there's no real lost opportunity of commerce. There's no real lost opportunity for people to decide to select this state over any other state based on those fees. So I see those as one of the sources of revenue that we have an opportunity, as you consider all sources of expenses and revenues, that makes sense from that point of view. I'm in favor of maintaining an adequate transportation system. I believe that without that, we put commerce at risk. There's probably nothing that can bring the state to a halt faster than an inadequate road system, and now complicated by the fact that what we're learning recently about the condition of our bridges. I would also favor a higher cigarette tax. I don't believe that that would create any competitive disadvantage for us in that regard, and it would, in fact, would put us more closely in line with neighboring states. So I would just like to close by saying that I think you have a monumental task. I'm very pleased as a citizen to see the cooperation that seems to be coming forth from the legislature and the governor's office in trying to reach an acceptable compromise. And I'm convinced when this is all done that we'll probably be very satisfied with the final outcome. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How long have you been the president of Wells Fargo in Oregon?
Yes, I've been president of Wells Fargo Bank in Oregon since 1996.
May I continue, Mr.
Yes, thank you.
I am, however, a third-generation Oregonian, and I've been with the bank for 40 years.
Thank you. When Wells Fargo took over First Interstate, what was kind of the reaction of Oregonians?
Well, I referred to that period of time of the hostile takeover by Wells Fargo Bank of First Interstate as a reign of terror. This is a different Wells Fargo Bank. These are individuals who purchased Wells Fargo Bank, and they're excellent managers and have returned to our state of Oregon the opportunity for our company to be a part of the state. I don't have to seek out-of-state approvals for the decisions we make that benefit the state of Oregon.
Sure. May I continue?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, the way I recall it, and as a person who was a customer of Wells Fargo Bank at the time, one of the many things that they did was they raised a lot of fees. They increased a lot of regulations. It was a lot harder to do business with Wells Fargo Bank. And this was a person who had been a customer of First National and First Interstate Bank my entire life. Could you tell the committee what was the response of Oregonians then, and what happened with your bank when they did this? They raised fees and kind of made it hard to do business with them.
Mm-hmm. There are aspects of the activities that went on during the course of this hostile takeover that I was not at all supportive of. Following the purchase of Wells Fargo Bank by the Norwest Bank, I reversed many of the decisions that had been made by the management of the old Wells Fargo Bank from California, including reopening of branches, hiring more bankers. The fee structures are actually, I don't have an issue with those because they're quite competitive. If they're not competitive, we would not have achieved a 30% increase in market share, the largest growth in market share of any major bank in the state.
Well, I guess my point was
a point of order, Mr. Chair. We're here to discuss Wells Fargo. We're here to discuss the state of Oregon and its problems.
I'm discussing the budget.
I would like to continue discussing the budget, Mr. Chair, and move on. We have a lot of witnesses here today.
I'd like the Senator to refrain from making a personal attack upon the witness and get to the subject of the budget issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I was just going to point out that I think Wells Fargo has done a good job in the last couple of years of regaining that, and I think the state of Oregon in their budgeting could take an example, because what they have done is they've lowered fees and gone back to a local idea, and they stimulated their own business by 30%, you said?
Yes.
By, in fact, lowering fees, and in economic bad times for their bank, they did not raise fees, they lowered them. Just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. Would the next witness please identify yourself?
My name is Alan Alley. I'm the chairman, CEO, and president of Pixelworks, the fastest growing company in Oregon. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Council of Knowledge and Economic Development. I also serve as the chairman of the board of trustees of the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. I'm the 2001 chairman of the American Electronics Association and currently serve on the executive committee of the American Electronics Association here in Oregon. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify today. First of all, I certainly understand that the problem that's put in front of you is extraordinarily difficult. I think it's a result of our state structure being based on something, personal income tax, that is extremely volatile, especially in these economic times. I think what I would like to see going forward is that we all get together and we look at how to put together a tax structure long-term for us that keeps us out of this situation that isn't quite as volatile as it is. But given that we're in the situation that we're in, we have some very, very tough choices to make. And those tough choices are on cuts, but I think those tough choices also come from where are the sources of revenue. I would certainly support it if this body decided to balance the budget by just making cuts. I think that's a viable alternative. I think it will be difficult. I think it will be extremely difficult to find those cuts. I think you'll actually be cutting some of the meat, not just the fat. But this is an extraordinarily difficult time. I know I'm in the high-tech business. I think if I was in your position, or if I was in the governor's position, I would probably look at ways to do both, to make some strategic cuts, but also look at areas where there may be sources of revenue so that we can continue to invest in some of the areas that we need to be investing in. One of the areas that all of you know that I have been a big proponent of is higher education. And I think to lead us out of this economic trough that we're in, and certainly to help my industry and the fastest growing industry in the state, we certainly have to continue to invest in higher education. On balance, I think the governor has actually made some very difficult but very good evenly weighted decisions in terms of areas to cut and also areas for revenue. I don't agree with every single line item when I go through the budget that he's done, but I'd say I agree on a remarkably large number of those line items. The other thing that I would encourage you to do is that if you do look for sources of revenue, please make it real revenue. Please don't borrow from one pot to put it back in another. Please don't mortgage our future. I'm actually a little dismayed with the Republicans that I supported at the federal level and what they're proposing in deficit spending over the next several years. I know we can't do that by statute here, but there are ways that can be sort of manifested in other ways by borrowing from the future. The final thing, and I think this is probably a little bit of good news. Maybe I'm the canary in the mine here a little bit, being in the high technology business. But over the last probably 6 weeks or so, I'm seeing signs that at least the high technology businesses on a global level are beginning to turn around. Some of the early indicators in terms of chip supplies out of the Far East, some of the lead times are stretching out, meaning that orders are picking up around the world. So I believe, and I'm just a data point of one, that we are certainly seeing the bottom right about now. Now, will this be a flat bottom and last for a quarter, two quarters, three quarters, or will it be kind of a V? I don't know. But the one other piece of data that I would bring to you, and it is just one piece of data, is that my own sources indicate that we are at a bottom and we'll probably turn from here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Yes.
Good afternoon. My name is Greg Cantor. I'm a resident of Multnomah County, but I'm here today representing Dick Wrighton, who is the chairman and CEO of Northwest Natural. He's asked me to articulate to you his position in support of the governor's package. He believes that the proposal identifies several revenue-producing steps that make some sense given the seriousness and the magnitude of the deficit that you face. He is particularly concerned about the state's transportation infrastructure. Over the last several years, he's been instrumental in putting together a group of Portland metropolitan area business leaders to look in depth at the lack of funding and the infrastructure, transportation infrastructure in the Portland area. And he and the group have concluded that the problem is very serious, and that additional revenues are required to maintain the infrastructure. The group is deeply concerned about the impact this could have on the state's economy, not just in the Portland metropolitan region, but across the state. In terms of the governor's package, he's looked at the transportation portion of it and believes that it puts forth an appropriate level of funding for in a sound way, given the level of our licensing fees at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions of the committee members? Thank you all. Mr. Co-Chair Weston.
Thank you. Just on behalf of the committee, I'd like to sincerely thank all of you for coming down. It's important to participate, and you, by your efforts and your actions, are here, and we appreciate that. And I also take it by the chair's action that this is not the time to talk to Mr. Pastor about the late fee on my credit card.
Can I catch you in the hall?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Greg Campbell. Is this an economic stimulus for a baseball park?
I promise I will not mention baseball beyond that. Chair Hannon, Chair Westland, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of AAA Oregon, Idaho, to support the governor's proposal for the Oregon Highway Investment Act Part 2, which continues on from what was done during the last legislative session. The governor cited to an article that was recently in the Oregonian that exposed some problems we're having with a number of our bridges in Oregon. That has created a serious safety concern for many of our members. And those bridges, which originally had an expected operational life of between 75 and 90 years, due to the fact that they were not designed for the weights that have gone over them, are now deteriorating at the 50-year level, many of them critically. That's the reason, primary reason, why AAA is in support of the package that the governor has presented to you. The crisis affects both the highway users and also the economies that are dependent upon our highway infrastructure. While you may have remembered what happened when we had flooding back in 1996 and 1997, when we had failures along Highway 101 and the devastation that that did to those communities, a number of these bridges exist in areas of high traffic and also are sometimes the only access to some communities. While we had trouble back during the flooding, the amount of damage that would be done if a bridge were to fail to the economies of those communities would be substantially greater because it takes much longer to repair them. There are, in addition, a number of bridges that have been weight limited, and while this does not affect the travel of automobiles, it does impact the travel of goods by truck over those bridges. That in turn has creates a problem for the trucking industries, who oftentimes have to divert those trucks 100 miles plus to get goods to where they're intended. But in addition to that, because of the economy of many businesses of Oregon have switched over to what's called a just-in-time delivery method. It saves them money so they don't have to stockpile goods, but it then depends upon trucking being able to get goods to them just in time for them to continue manufacturing whatever else. When you have bridges that are weight limited, that prevents that from happening. And that has exacerbated a problem we already have in Oregon's economy, which gives us another reason why now is a good time for us to act to try and rectify the bridge problem. The proposal before you would generate new revenues to address the problem, part of which would be an increase in registration fees of $15 per year. Generally, AAA is not thrilled with the idea of increases in registration fees because we have a general policy of user pay. When you have a registration fee, those who tend to use the highways a great deal end up paying less per mile, and those who use it not at all end up paying a larger burden of those registration fees and end up subsidizing those who use the roads a lot. However, $15 a month is a very modest increase and doesn't really impact that overall policy, so it's not something that's a great concern for AAA. In addition, the bill for the first time in a great deal is looking at an increase in weight mile taxes. There have been no increases and, in fact, two decreases in weight mile tax since 1995. That is one of the requirements that AAA has whenever it supports a tax increase package. That tax increase package would require the trucks pay their fair share. And we've been in contact with the Department of Transportation, and we are convinced that the numbers that are in the LC-12 draft are either close or can be easily adjusted to reflect cost responsibility. In closing, I want to say that I understand that the committee has a difficult choice whether or not they would proceed on a package like this. It's never easy to increase taxes, especially not at a time like this when we're dealing with a special session and a great deal of pressure is upon you. However, I would ask or suggest that to resolve the bridge problem that we have, we are going to need additional resources. It will not be sufficient that we merely harness a quick fix from existing resources to do so. Now, you can either do that now or during next session. Now would be better because it will allow us to get to the bridge problem earlier. But if you don't do this now, I would recommend that you not do anything that would create a false expectation that would prevent us from doing something next session. I thank you very much for your time and your efforts, and good luck.
Thank you. Questions? But thank you. Bruce Warner, Gail Ackerman, and Pat Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Pat Egan. I'm Governor Kitzhaber's Transportation and Economic Development Policy Advisor. You have my written testimony being circulated here. Governor and Craig have highlighted a couple of the basic points, so I'll just fill in some gaps and talk about some of the policy considerations that went into the creation of this legislation. First of all, the revenue source. Governor talked mostly about that. The revenue source here is a combination of registration fee increase of $15 per year per car. Registration fees also go up proportionally on all vehicle classes. As far as weight mile for trucks go, the Constitution now has cost responsibility in it, and the weight mile tax in our proposal would go up to 13.4 cents per mile. And just a couple of things on both of those. Registration fee in Oregon has not been raised since 1989. Governor mentioned it's 50th in the nation. South Carolina beats us by a little bit. District of Columbia is above us. As far as weight mile goes, that has not been adjusted upwards since 1992. And our proposal would establish the level that it was at roughly 1990. So, and those are real dollars. That's not inflation. That's not inflation adjusted. So our proposal, essentially, we see it as a fairly reasonable proposal. The registration fee that we're proposing would actually get us to 45th in the United States, so we still have 44 states above us. And as far as the revenue generated from that annually, we're looking at about $75 million annually. Those dollars would flow into the state highway fund and back out to local government. Half of it would flow out back out to local government. 30% to counties, 20% to cities. We bond some of that new money. We also bond some money for state bridge improvement. As far as expenditures go, and Bruce Warner can talk about portions of those, our total package includes money for modernization and preservation, similar to the Oregon Transportation Investment Act 1. The Transportation Commission, and Gail can tell you about her experience there, but many of you actually got new projects in your districts. Some of you had projects that were just below the line. We feel that there's plenty more to be done out there. I think that's a clear statement in terms of bridge repair and in terms of road improvement. One clear distinction that I want to make in terms of revenue here is that our package actually provides new revenue on top of and pays for bonding. Without new revenue, there would be no new money going out to local governments. And many of the members that I've talked to have told me, for example, from Washington County. Washington County has a list of $16 million in bridge projects that they could get to, they believe, immediately. But without new money, without new money going down to local governments, those projects won't happen at least anytime soon. Just in terms of the economic hit, this is under our economic stimulus package. We believe it's good long-term and short-term. In the short-term, obviously, we're looking at job creation, and we feel this is a reasonable source of revenue and a reasonable way to spend the money. We're looking at a 6 to 8 year time horizon for the projects, and obviously, this would create, we believe, thousands of jobs. conservative economists will tell you that there are 20 jobs created for every $1 million spent per year on transportation projects. That can go up as high as 35 jobs, but we're using the low figure. And just considering the state dollars we're proposing to spend, that would create about 2,000 to 2,500 jobs over the next 6 to 8 years. And this also doesn't include the local government dollars of about $37 million a year that would also be spent. Long term, and you heard some of the business community mention this, I think others will comment as well, timber still needs to get to the mill. Forest products still need to get down to the mill. Crops still need to get to the processor, and chips still need to get to the airport. Oregon Business Council last session and throughout the interim has pretty eloquently stated, I think, that productivity goes down when you've got a truck waiting in traffic and personnel not getting into their workplaces. One final note that I would, a couple of final notes here. First of all, the federal government this year will be reauthorizing its major appropriations bill. That's a lot of federal money they'll be making decisions about soon. And Congress helps those who help themselves. The more dollars we put into projects in Oregon, both in state and local projects, the more dollars we'll be able to get earmarked back. Final point here is the governor had something appointed called the Economic Strategy Advisory Group. It included representatives from Intel, Nike, AFL-CIO, and a variety of public and private interests. This is the product of that strategy advisory group. They ranked a couple of dozen economic stimulus ideas, and transportation investment came up number one, including new revenue to pay for those transportation investments. That's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your time. Gail.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gail Achterman. I'm a member of the Oregon Transportation Commission. I want to send greetings from Commissioner Randy Pape, who was here to testify at 8:30 this morning. Couldn't stay the day, so I'm pinch hitting for Commissioner Pape. But I think all of us on the commission are very enthusiastic supporters of LC-12, Legislative Concept 12, which would, if you act upon it, enact the Oregon Transportation Investment Act of 2002. Just about a month ago, we were able to take action implementing the legislation you passed in 2001 and making in $400 million worth of investments in needed transportation in facilities throughout the state. I think that the commission, the department, and the entire transportation industry, if you will, are really ready to move these projects forward, and I think we're going to see construction start on some of them as soon as the construction season really opens up this summer. And some quick examples of those projects, the projects that we just funded, the Fords Bridge in Douglas County on Interstate 5, the southbound Grave Creek Bridge in Josephine County, repairing the Broadway Bridge in Portland, the Rick Rial Interchange on just east of here, the South Medford Interchange, the Madras North Junction, Highway is 97 Highway 97 and US 26 come into Madras. I think that those of us on the commission, everyone in the department and in city and county governments learned a lot through the Oregon Transportation Investment Act project selection and approval process. It was a real eye-opener, and I sat in on a number of meetings at the local level with local officials as well as the affected property owners to have them really hone in on their lists. And it was truly staggering to see what the needs are. And this was a list that really was a very tailored funding package. This wasn't all the needs. You had to fit in the categories that the legislature had identified as priorities. We had $400 million to spend, and the request that came into the department for qualified projects was $1.5 billion. There's just an enormous need, even for this very narrow set of projects that were authorized in the 2001 session. To illustrate that need just very briefly, for bridge projects, there were $727 million worth of projects identified as needed. We could only fund $130 million, a fraction of the immediate needs. For the modernization projects, $630 million of requests came in for $200 million worth of projects. Now, you need to understand, these projects aren't projects that need a lot of additional planning work before delivery. These are projects that the local governments and the cities and counties and the state have been working on some time. They had to meet a project readiness criteria. So this isn't dreams 20 years out. This is immediate needs that affect communities. I think that the legislative concept, LC-12, acknowledges these critical needs and offers us an opportunity and vision to address them. I think that you all know the bridge story. You've heard testimony on that already. I'm not going to repeat it. But I wanted to share with you what I learned as we went around the state on hearings on the 2001 statute, and that was how much of our testimony came from business owners who are having real difficulties operating their business because of the condition of our state transportation system. We've got an enormous investment in the existing infrastructure. We can barely maintain it. And we certainly have we can't, on existing funding, meet the needs of the growing areas of the state, whether it's in southern Oregon, the coast, the metropolitan area, or central Oregon. So simply put, if we're going to preserve and develop our transportation system statewide, we've got to make more investments than we can right now. All we're doing with the 2001 funding, the $400 million, is a triage exercise of addressing the absolutely most critical need, and there's still this huge funding gap that was revealed by the OTIA process in 2001. I could speak about road congestion and disrepair just as much as you've heard about the problems with bridges. We saw the need. I can assure you that the state of readiness is there, as I said before, with not only the State Department of Transportation, but with city and county governments. I've heard it from the contracting community, heard it from the consulting community. We're really figuring out streamlined ways to deliver these projects very expeditiously. We're ready to move if we have the funds, and we certainly have the needs to be met. You've got some very challenging decisions to make in the upcoming days, but I certainly hope, as a member of the Transportation Commission, that you take the opportunity to increase fees for vehicle registration so that we can not only create jobs, but address very immediate concerns to our business community and to all of our citizens. And your vision and leadership will really help us move forward, and we're ready to take on that challenge. Thank you.
Mr. Warner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner, the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Much of what I was going to say has already been said. I believe there'll be a memo coming around that explains a bit more about the department's perspective on legislative concept number 12. But what I wanted to outline for the committee is I've been on this job now for not quite a year, and I have had an opportunity to go all around the state and talk to folks about transportation. And I want to let you know almost everyone with whom I've spoken has expressed concerns and worries about not only the state transportation system but the local transportation system. I believe you're probably going to hear in a little bit about local governments and some of their needs for just basic maintenance and preservation of the system they have. And they have, most all of the local governments have systems and portions of their system that are starting to fail. When you read in the press, one like the Sabi Island bridge failure, it becomes very apparent of the infrastructure problems we have. But I would submit to you that every local government out there has the similar problems throughout the state. And our system is aging, as Mr. Campbell pointed out, and quite frankly, we've not been able to keep up. I also hear from the mothers who are concerned about their children's safety, both walking to school and in the buses. I hear from motorists who want safety improvements, signals, interchanges, all of those kind of things. But the troubling one that I'm starting to hear a lot more is from business and industry who are saying they're very concerned about the movement of goods and services around the state. And many of them are concerned about the future and increasing transportation costs that will add to their bottom line and, frankly, make them uncompetitive in the world market. And so there's a lot of frustration and concerns out there, all the way down to the coastal communities who are very concerned about slides or bridge failures isolating their communities. So when I look at this package, it's a package that does start to address some of the local government needs. It is very important to local governments. I used to come from Washington County, which at the time I was there, first off, was the laughingstock of the state in terms of the transportation system. So I know firsthand what happens when you do not invest properly in transportation. and it does cost considerably more to rehabilitate or repair the system when you let them, the roads fall into a poor condition. And I'm sorry to say that many of our roads, especially at the local level, are starting to fall into that bad condition where it will cost considerably more to repair and replace them. This proposal does give additional revenues to local governments. It does allow us to bond the new revenues. It does allow us to bond some of the existing revenues to take care of some of our critical bridge and transportation improvements. And I wanted to make it clear to the committee that if you're willing to move forward on this proposal, the department is ready, willing, and able to move forward on this. And as Commissioner Achterman mentioned, we have a lot of folks from the private sector are going to help, and we're going to be very innovative in making sure that we utilize the private sector to the fullest amount, because I do not see the department staffing up in any significant way to deliver these projects. Bonding is a great tool, especially in today's financial situation. However, bonding without new revenues is not as attractive because, as you know, when those bonds are all funds are all expended, you still have to continue making a payment to repay those bonds. And so effectively, the dollars you have available after those bond proceeds are gone actually is less than what you would have today. So without new revenues, we'll fall even to lower levels of preservation in the near future. Oregon needs new investment. And I think I would just call your attention to the old STP ad that says, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. And I'm sorry to say that if we wait much longer, it's going to be much more expensive and probably much more painful. I think the folks I've talked to around the state feel that our vehicle registration fees are ridiculously low, and most of them have been waiting for some time for them to be increased to deal with some of the demands out there. So it is time to invest in the infrastructure, and we stand, again, willing and ready to help you move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Quick question. I don't know if you have the answer. Maybe the answer can come forward in the next short period of time. If we would bond to this level, has there been any discussion in terms of how much that would impact our general fund in terms of new revenue coming into the general fund if we're bonding, doing these types of bridge, putting that many Oregonians back to work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we've done some analysis on the Oregon Transportation Investment Act as an example. The $400 million of investment would yield about $20.4 million worth of just individual income tax proceeds to the state of Oregon. We've been actually are trying to determine a figure for corporate income taxes from the firms that are doing the work, but you can see there is a pretty good return. I don't think we have a total number. Maybe Mr. Egan has some further information on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, just this morning I called over to Bruce's department for a follow-up on this question. Initially, when we were looking at this bill, we were thinking in terms of a $750 million bonding package. And looking back at OT01, the bond rates are attractive enough that both Representative Starr's legislation and this legislation would increase that bond cap, or at least give the department the ability to increase that bond cap up to $500 million. So when we originally ran the numbers, we were anticipating, I think, 6 to 8 years and an additional 20, very conservatively, I think, 20-some million just on the personal income tax side, and we were not able to get corporate income tax figures. So contractors and some of those folks were not in that equation. So that's a pretty low number. When we added the $100 million or so, I think, well, we were assuming that we might do up to 50 of that. It was an additional $2 million or something like that. I mean, I guess the basic point that you're getting at really here is when you're generating more economic activity, is there going to be a positive impact on the general fund? The answer to that is yes. I don't have enough information to give you the precise figure right now.
Okay, further questions? Representative Schrader.
It's a quick question. From Mr. Egan regarding comparing the effects or benefits of the title increase we did versus the registration fee increase that's being proposed now.
The benefits. Looking at what you all did in the Transportation Investment Act 1, you increased title fees, which are fees that you pay when you first buy a car or you first bring it into the state of Oregon. That was at $10. You all increased it, and the governor signed the bill that increased that to $30. That became effective in October of last year. It's a pretty substantial increase. We didn't get too many calls, and my guess is you all didn't get too many calls either. transaction levels didn't go down in the last quarter of this last year as opposed to last year. This is registration fee. That's what you pay every 2 years. That generates more income than a title fee increase because it's an ongoing, you'll pay that over time on the same vehicle. This is also something that in the short term, a lot of people will not pay because it's, you know, staggered over a 2 year period. So, does that answer your question?
That's right.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you. Further questions? Not thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to remind people that are testifying, we're on a very short time schedule here yet this afternoon. There's still quite a few people signed up, and so we need to move rapidly. Jessica Harris, Bob Shiprack, Tim Nesbitt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Harris. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors to speak in favor of LC-12, the governor's transportation package. AGC and its member companies, you've heard a lot about the need for transportation investment from the public side. We're here to talk about from the company side, for our employees, for their families, for our companies, and the future of our industry. We need additional investment in transportation infrastructure. Our companies have had a hard time in the last decade staying in business, but especially in a recession where the private investment, where the work they've done for private developers has started to slip away. It's been hard for our companies to stay in business and keep their doors open. They're taking jobs at cost just to keep their employees busy. We view this package as an opportunity not only to address the critical needs of our transportation infrastructure, but also to keep our employees busy, keep them working. In response to some of what Representative Hansen asked, we would like to say that Oregon companies are a member of AGC. There's about 30,000 employees represented by our organization that generate about $1.8 billion in payroll per year. We have done some figures generally on construction in general, not so much on highways specifically, but we figure that about for every dollar you spend in construction, 60 cents gets recycled through the rest of the economy. So an investment in public infrastructure, an investment in transportation, not only benefits the companies I represent in a true self-interest kind of way, but in addition, it benefits the rest of the economy as that money gets recycled through, as it gets spent, as it generates, again, income tax from both corporate side and from the personal side back into the general fund. We view this as a win-win situation. It's a win for the state of Oregon. It fixes the infrastructure that desperately needs it. But it's a win for Oregon companies that have been here, family-owned businesses, been here for a long time with family-wage jobs. Keep them busy, put them back to work, and ensure that we have a stable economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Shiprack?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Shiprack, Oregon Building Trades Council. I'm going to be very brief. I've been invited to talk to both House and Senate committees the last month and a half about the unemployment situation in the construction trades. It continues to get worse. I thought maybe in the second quarter we'd see something, but I don't see that light at the end of the tunnel. Speaking to some of the architects and engineers, there's not a lot of work on their plates either, so that means as that food chain comes down, Jessica's contractors aren't going to see a lot of work, and my workers aren't going to have an opportunity for employment as well. Just an update on what the industry looks like. Also want to comment on the bonding aspects of the governor's program. It's my understanding with bonding that when you ensure a guaranteed revenue stream, that the cost of those bonds would go to the benefit of the state, that they wouldn't cost us as much. Also want to comment on something I think Mr. Warner was trying to say. I've talked to Jessica about this. There's no revenue attached to this, and you purchase these bonds really, and there's no revenue that's added down the line, we're at a net loss. It's a net loss to us. I mean, we haven't accomplished anything. I just wanted to point that out. And the last thing I'd comment, in this economy, and if we get these projects out the door as quick as possible, because of the current situation, construction right now is a really good buy because of the competition. Jessica's contractors are very competitive right now out there on these projects, and the state of Oregon and the counties could save a substantial amount of money getting these projects out as soon as possible
due to that factor as well. Just some additional thoughts I wanted to share with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Nesbitt.
Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee, I'm Tim Nesbitt, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, here to support LC-12, the proposal for an increase in the vehicle registration fee. Obviously, you're about to begin a special session to address a problem greater than the general fund budget problem. It's because we have an economy in recession, because we have the highest unemployment rate in the country, that we have the fiscal crisis affecting the general fund. But the problem is larger than that, and we're hoping that you will take the opportunity of the special session to look beyond the rebalance in the general fund to these kinds of proposals for economic stimulus. We represent 170,000 working men and women in Oregon, another 15,000 out of work. And as Mr. Shipwreck said, many of those are in the construction field, but many others are in the manufacturing area. I would call to your attention that we have 38,000 fewer jobs in Oregon than a year ago. 18,000 of the jobs lost have been in the manufacturing sector. 15% of our overall jobs are in manufacturing, but three times that meant 48% of the total jobs lost have been in manufacturing. And the manufacturing sector is the sector that has the highest proportion of family wage jobs of all the sectors in the state. Think of the machinists laid off in Boeing. Think of the workers at Athena Chemical, which closed last year. Think of a number of the steel workers employed in the aluminum plants, which are now closed. And we have a real challenge in trying to stimulate our economy and put in place the infrastructure and the ingredients we need for long-term economic growth, a high-quality recovery, and sustainable economic growth in the future. Key to that is transportation infrastructure. Let me try and connect the dots for you a little bit. Talked about the number of manufacturing workers out of work. At the same time, and some of that was caused by our short-term crisis in energy costs, but we still have the aluminum mills shut down in the gorge. We have now a company willing to locate in North Portland, Vestas, who would actually build the wind turbines that are going to be installed in the gorge as we develop alternative energy sources. We have an out-of-work workforce, the machinists from Boeing and others, those laid off from Freightliner who are ready to be trained very easily to take those jobs. But that company is not going to locate in North Portland if they can't get their product over our roads and bridges into the gorge. That's just an example of how we have to look at the needs of our transportation infrastructure and make sure we're putting in place the investments to address those needs, or we're going to see a less speedy recovery, a lower quality recovery, and we're going to lose our competitive advantage in Oregon and in the Northwest in terms of attracting high-quality family-wage jobs. So we would hope that you would take this opportunity to address the economic stimulus potential right now and help us shape our future and put in place the infrastructure we need to really promote high-quality growth in the future.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Lynn Lundquist, Mayor Jim Torrey, Christopher Curtis.
Mayor, Chairman Hannon, members of the committee, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I'll try to be very quick. I have a long set of pages here. I'm not going to do that to you. I do want to let you know that I support and the League of Oregon Cities support the measure for the Transportation Improvement Act 2002. There is never going to be...
Co-Chair Weston?
Jim, just for the record, could you introduce yourself? And could all the witnesses, as you begin speaking, even though you've been called up by name?
I apologize. My name is Jim Torrey. I'm the mayor of the city of Eugene, and I'm the chair of the Transportation Committee of the League of Oregon Cities. I apologize. Let me just say that 2 months ago, I was in Washington, D.C. as a member of the National Conference of Mayors. One of the things that we tried to do back in Washington, D.C. was, actually it was 3 months ago, to talk to the members of Congress, to find a way to have an economic stimulus method that would stimulate our infrastructure and the economy in the state of Oregon and nationwide. And I was told in every instance that you couldn't make it work fast enough to make an impact in the economy and in the workforce loss in your state. I can tell you that that may have been the case in the rest of the states in the country, but that's not the case in the state of Oregon. With the OTIF program that we just went through in Oregon, we are prepared to move forward with programs and projects that are ready to move. Now, I'm not going to speak about the bridges, and I'm not going to speak about the big transportation improvement projects. I'm going to speak specifically about the need for maintenance on the streets of the city in the state of Oregon. We have a $130 million per year need just to stay even. That's not an improvement, it's just to stay even. I have a map here that I'm going to leave that shows that in the city of Eugene, we have a $9 million a year need from day one just to break even. I'm also going to tell you that if this money is made available to the cities, I believe that the vast majority of them will do like the city of Eugene will do, and that is to immediately hire private sector contractors to do overlay work on our city streets. That overlay work will have a dramatic impact on the quality of our streets immediately. There is no good time to put a fee increase into the Oregon economy. There just never will be one. But I would point out there's probably not a better time than right now to use the employees that are out of work to put it against the system that needs maintenance today that will save us money in the future. You folks did a tremendously good thing in the last session with the OT in 2001. You're to be complimented, and I want to find some way to have you work both sides of the aisle to do something that's needed now. Don't walk away from this opportunity at this time to make a difference in the economy and the economic infrastructure of our state. Transportation drives that. Thank you very much for letting me be here today.
Thank you.
Well, can I say one last thing? Very quick. I enjoyed the discussion with the Wells Fargo Bank. I will tell you what happened in Eugene as a result of some of those decisions. They shut down some of their satellite branches. They turned one of them over to the city of Eugene as a satellite library, and I want to make sure that they get some credit for that good act.
Lynn?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Yesterday we had a board meeting, and I wish it could have been a week or two ago. However, as you know, when you're dealing with CEOs of some rather large companies, it's difficult to get those meetings together, and we was already set up for yesterday. I wonder if you could just visualize a little bit the board meeting that we had and who was sitting around the tables. Not all of them, but just let me give you a few names because I think it sort of sets the stage from the standpoint of who is involved. Fonken Torp, CH2M Hill, Norm Thompson, Wells Fargo, PGE, Nike, Stories, Columbia Sportswear, Hannah Anderson Industries, Louisiana Pacific, Standard Insurance, Liberty Northwest, Bear Creek Orchards from down in Medford, and last but not least, Fred Meyer, who is the second largest employer in the state. I will preface my remarks with the fact that we had unanimous approval of what I'm going to present to you today. When I signed up, I noted a neutral on the governor's concepts here because some of them we agree with and some of them we don't. You have the testimony for you, but I want to go just to the meat of it in regard to what we believe is an appropriate process and outcome for the budget process that I understand is so very, very difficult. Part of what we've come up with coincides with the governor, and part of it coincides with the Gang of Five. I'm sorry, I don't have a better terminology to use. In regard to the cuts, starting with the cuts, we went along with the Gang of Five's $275 million in cuts, which is larger than the governor's. And that's on the non-education side. On the education side, which is a major plank of our association working with education, transportation, and the sustainable economy and environment, we said 1% cut on K-12, 2% on community colleges and higher education. Now, to make that work out financially to balance the budget, we obviously have to look at how we're going to do that. When we were here and testified before the Senate Revenue Committee, I guess a month and a half ago, at that point we said no new taxes unless, after turning the rocks, there was no other way to keep what we believed education at an appropriate level. To our knowledge, there has been no other way come forth to do that without having some sort of a revenue input. On existing revenues, we look at all the MUPL money, all the tobacco settlement money, We want to increase the common school payout from 2% to 5%, not get into the corpus. That's about a $42 million increase. Also wanted to use $20 million out of the lottery contingency fund, which we've talked with them, and they say that that's available. Those are existing funds. On new funds, even though before we said we do not support any taxes, because we haven't found another way, we would support the beer and wine and the 50 cents on the per pack on the tobacco situation. That balances the budget. We made one other caveat, and that was this. If, in fact, Measure 88 was to be repealed, for, or not repealed, but deferred for just 1 year only, not 2 years, but 1 year only, which would be a $91 million increase, and those funds were used for education, we would support that. Otherwise, we would not support deferral of Measure 88. That is the sum, I think, meat of the situation. We understand the difficulty that you face. But I just wanted to offer to you from the Oregon Business Association, which I believe has a represents some of the very large, some of the large, as well as some of the small businesses of the state, the fact that our two basic principles that underlie all that I've said. Number one, don't borrow from the future. And secondly, if the services that you are responsible to provide for the citizens of Oregon are not valuable enough to fund, then let's cut them and let's be up front and say we're going to do that. If we don't need some counselors, if we don't need some teachers, then let's say that and let's cut them, and we can live with that. Then in one other subject, the transportation, just want to let you know that our board did vote unanimously to support an increase in transportation revenue, and if we do have an increase in revenue, we would support the bonding. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would you'd be sitting there advocating if we were talking about abolishing the pollution control tax credit? Let's look at the companies that benefit. Portland General Electric, owned by Enron. Willamette Industries, it's now owned by Weyerhaeuser. That's a Washington-based company. If we were talking about repealing the pollution tax credit, would your business group be sitting here saying, damn right, you're going to tax those cigarettes, and tax that beer and wine, tax business and industry the same way? How about offering up something?
Mr. Chairman, I can't say for sure because we didn't talk about that specifically, but I will tell you on the discussion we had yesterday and the fact that education, we want to stand on that, I would not be surprised if they would say that. I just simply can't as president without talking to the board. I don't mean to be avoiding the question.
Thanks. Okay, questions? Mr. Curtis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Christopher Curtis. I'm the communications director for the Oregon Partnership, which is a statewide nonprofit organization dedicated to substance abuse prevention and treatment referral. I'm also a member of the Oregon Coalition to Reduce Underage Drinking, and I'm here in support of the proposed increase in beer and wine taxes. The beer and wine tax in Oregon is in serious need of adjustment. Passing a 5-cent increase on beer and wine would bring Oregon more in line with similar taxes implemented by our neighboring states. It would help reduce health care costs associated with alcohol use and abuse, and would improve public safety and lessen the human toll associated with alcohol abuse. Increasing the beer and wine tax is not just a tax adjustment, it is an issue of tax fairness. As the committee knows, Oregon's beer and wine taxes have not been revisited since 1977 and 1983, respectively. Since 1983, the industry's contribution to general revenues has shrunk as a contribution or a percentage of revenues from $10.5 million of a $1.6 billion budget in 1983 to about $12.5 million of a $12 billion budget. In simpler terms, while inflation and the cost of state programs has increased the general fund almost 650% over that time period, the increase in contributions from the industry has only increased by about 20%. In real terms, the industry share of overall budget revenue has actually decreased from a tiny 0.6% in 1983 to a nearly infinitesimal 0.1% today. This represents a huge tax break for one industry when taxpayers are faced with cuts to critical services affecting them and/or increased revenues in other areas. The industry says that maintaining this tax as it stands, with no increase, is about fairness. And we wholeheartedly agree this is an issue about fairness to Oregon taxpayers. I believe that the governor has addressed this morning the issue of fairness that the industry had brought up, which was a concern relative to microbreweries and some having a certain cutoff and having to approach that, whereas others would be exempt. And under this new proposal, that issue would be addressed, and so all of the microbreweries more or less would be exempt from this proposal. But I suggest that passing a tax increase on beer and wine is about fairness for the average Oregon taxpayer. During the last two decades, when the general fund was growing to accommodate more Oregonians and a higher demand for services, revenues increased to match that pace and the cost of inflation. This is true for most revenue streams as well, with the exception of the beer and wine tax. How is it that taxpayers and other industries are asked to pay for more each year, while an industry that is taxing our health care, law enforcement, and justice systems skates by without having to pay its fair share? We know that there is a huge disparity between what the state of Oregon pays out in costs associated with substance abuse, and alcohol abuse makes up a large share of that. According to a study published by the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University, the state of Oregon spends almost $1 billion alone on costs related to substance abuse. The beer and wine tax, as currently structured, makes up 1.3% contribution to that total amount. The tobacco industry has long since ceded that it is responsible for a significant portion of the healthcare costs that its product creates. It is not unreasonable to suggest that the beer and wine industry likewise pay a modest amount more to help defray expenses incurred by the use of its products. Otherwise, Oregon taxpayers will be forced to continue subsidizing this industry for the costs associated with its products. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address the committee, the Oregon Partnership, and other substance abuse prevention treatment providers around the state appreciate the difficulty of the task that lies before the legislature. We respectfully ask for your careful consideration on this important issue, and thank you for your time. I'd just like to add, anecdotally, that our organization takes over 10,000 calls a year on our 24-hour crisis intervention helpline. And those callers, I'm sure, would wholeheartedly support any kind of a tax that's going to help reduce substance abuse and addiction in the state of Oregon. These people are struggling. This is about families. It's about children. And there's a human side to this that's not reflected in all of the budget numbers and the budget discussions that we're talking about. We see that every day at the Oregon Partnership, and I urge all of you to think carefully about how this is going to impact and have a positive benefit by raising the revenues associated with beer and wine on those people as well.
Thank you. Questions? No, thank you. Senator Cordy?
I have to ask this question. I know you're enjoying part of this because there's a chance we're going to come out of this special session with at least some kind of rainy day fund, or at least we'll call it that. And as one who promoted last session, you must be taking great fun and sort of enjoying the pain of that. I told you so. But I got to know, in terms of your organization, I just have to, there are beer and wine companies in there and tobacco companies in your organization?
In our organizations, they asked one of the board members yesterday that produces wine. I think we only have two or three producers of beer and wine, and obviously don't have any producers of cigarettes or tobacco. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I was just looking for some of them. I was hoping we're hearing from our visitors. I would like to have some of them come before us and say that. Just, you know my record. I'll vote. You know me. But I'm looking for them to come here and talk to us about these things.
I know your damn record, too. All right, thank you. Niner, Robart, Ron Tempe, is there anybody else that wishes to testify that hasn't signed up? Please come up. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you.
Mr. Rose, come on up. Time's running short. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you. My name is Nina Robart. I'm the director of the Oregon Coalition to Reduce Underage Drinking, but I'm here on my own behalf to support the governor's budget proposal, particularly as it in relation to the increase in the tax on beer. I just have one thing to say to add what Christopher Curtis has already said. He's given you a lot of basic information. So is the information that I have in writing that I've presented to you. I just want to say this. Based on, we have contacts throughout the state of Oregon in our coalition. We're represented in every county, in every town. Based on my conversations with people in your jurisdiction, I believe firmly that every person, there would be a high percentage of the people in the jurisdictions that each one of you represent, that looking at the budget cuts you are recommend or you are looking at facing, and measuring that against an increase in the beer and wine to offset a portion of that cost, particularly an increase in the beer tax, which hasn't been increased since 74 and is almost the lowest in the nation, those people would vote, if this were put to them, to increase the beer tax. That's not only my opinion, but that poll after poll in both Oregon and throughout the United States has supported that. To use this money, particularly for treatment and prevention, but the last poll I know of in Oregon in 97, there was a 57% favorable opinion on the increase in the beer tax, no matter what you do with the money. Our coalition supports, in general, the increase in the tax because it reduces consumption among youth, and that is our primary goal. But our interest is consistent with yours in looking for funds, looking for some way to balance this budget. And I would sincerely ask you to give that a consideration that I know so far some of you have not been willing to look at. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rose?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I won't take much of your time. You've seen some of the stuff that we've put out in writing. We are absolutely convinced that the current system won't pay for all the bills, not just school bills, but all the bills we're committed to. And this has been coming since we passed Measure 5. Most of us know that. We're now hit with a downturn in the economy. It's not the last downturn. There's going to be another downturn in your lifetime after we have an upturn. We need to try to think long term. Many of you are adamant that you can't raise a tax. These may not be the right taxes, but our tax system needs to be adjusted, and we need to deal with it. And we would hope that you would consider that. The borrowing concept, we borrowed in 97, we borrowed in 99, and now we're going to borrow or looking at borrowing now. We can't forever borrow our way out of these problems, and how difficult it may be to consider taxes. They need to be considered in our view, and we encourage you to sit down. I know you're having a difficult time, and I know all the things that make it difficult, but all the things are on the table to reach a compromise amongst both parties, both houses, the governor's office, in the various proposals. There's reductions, there's taxes, there's borrowing, there's other pots of money, and I would encourage you to, at this point, in this hour, to undig your heels and say all those things are there and see if we can't put together a package that will work for the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. If you wait around after the last witness testifies, Mr. Rose, there's going to be a proposal to unborrow the borrowing. So you might want to stick around for the entertainment. Mr. Tempe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and others on the panel. My name is Ron Tempe. I'm president of Standard Insurance Company, domiciled in Portland, Oregon. I also have a variety of things I probably should admit to, that I've worked long and hard on rainy day fund legislation. I've been here often in the support of school funding and a variety of things like that. I thank you for the hard work, and I apologize for not being here on time, and I'll be brief so that I don't just repeat what everyone else has said. I think I start by saying thank you. It looks like you're approaching this in a very balanced way. I think it's not easy, but I think a balance between some service cuts, which I know will hurt some of the things I've been down for in the past, and tax increases is a very worthwhile approach to things. I come to it with one bias, and I'll admit to that bias, and that bias starts with a belief, and a strong belief, that basically a healthy economy
is really the best source and maybe the only source of public revenue. So my encouragement is that when we consider actions to be taken, let's keep in mind not only the short term and the long term, but a healthy economy with high employment and high wages is what drives the revenue that we get to spend on public services. So the idea of jump-starting public transportation, I think, is a great idea. The idea of making sure that we don't create additional taxes on work and investment is also a great idea, because we want to come out of this as fast as possible, and I think a strong economy is the best way to do it. I encourage a rainy day fund. I don't know where you've locked your heels in on what, or so I come to it saying thanks for the bias, or the balance that you're applying, and bias, yeah, unfortunately, the balance you're applying, and I think from my standpoint, some cuts are needed, and some increases in revenue are needed. Okay. The best of luck to you.
Thank you, Ron. Questions? Representative Shetterly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to put the last two speakers' comments together. One is, I wish we had a rainy day fund. The other one is don't borrow. Now, if we had a rainy day fund, I mean, if we had done what we should have done 10 years ago, built up a rainy day fund, so we're not looking at some other fund now to use as a de facto rainy day fund for this short period of time, wouldn't we be looking at drawing money on that rainy day fund now? And if we were, wouldn't we be looking at needing to reimburse that rainy day fund in order to maintain it as a whole, or else we're using up the rainy day fund for a one-time purpose, and that's hardly effective. So I guess, Ozzy, going back to, you know, if that's the case, if we're not willing to take money out of a resource that's available now with the understanding that we're going to have to replace that when revenues go up, why are we even talking about a rainy day fund? Isn't that what you have to do if you're going to take money out of a rainy day fund, commit to pay it back?
He said both of us, but I think...
Yeah, I know. I'm synthesizing the comments. Right. So we need a rainy day fund,
but
we don't want to borrow. And so why build a rainy day fund if the circumstances are such that we don't want to take money out when times are down because we have to put it back?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shetterly, your comment is well taken. My problem with the discussion is that we didn't build a rainy day fund, but even now when we're talking about it, you know, we borrowed money in 97, we borrowed in 99, and we're not talking about the borrowing in the context of where will we be in the future, other than this will get us through this scrape, in my view. And we need to talk about the rainy day in a fund, a rainy day concept in a way that gets us some permanent plans for that. You're correct, in a rainy day fund, you do take money from it and you replace it. In that sense, that's borrowing. But that, in my view, what's going on so far isn't packaged very well. We'll borrow this, get on, and we'll be in the next session, we'll be in the soup, and we won't have done anything. I still think that the issue of tax revenues need to be on the table as part of that discussion, or we'll be back in the same soup as we are now.
If I can just follow up. I mean, I agree. Structurally, we don't have a real rainy day fund, but I think that the point that you're touching on is it would still be the same if we had a rainy day fund, that we would still be drawing out of a rainy day fund at a point when our revenues are down and we're looking up at the at a recovery in the future from which we anticipate having revenues to repay. I think that fundamental issue would still be in front of us if we had the world's best rainy day fund. We would still be faced with drawing money out in a downtime and understanding that we were having to commit certain revenues in the future to put it back. I don't think it's a separate issue of what the structure is. Conceptually, we still have to get past that point, or else we might not even, why even bother build a rainy day fund?
I don't disagree with that.
Okay, further questions? If not, thank you all. Is there anyone unannounced who would like to testify? Yes. Would you keep it brief? We're trying to finish up.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'm Olivia Clark from the Governor's Office, and I have two of my colleagues with me. We're here basically to answer questions. We have resources in the audience. Should you have any questions on either the cigarette tax proposal, the beer and wine tax proposal, or the repeal of Measure 88. Jean Thorne has some written testimony that she can submit on the stabilization fund proposal. If you have any questions for her, I think there's just maybe one or two things she wants to say. And Pam Curtis has just a couple of comments on the beer and wine proposal. And that's it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Gene Thorne, Governor's Education Advisor, I think just actually, rather than going through how these funds would work, I think to follow up actually on Representative Shetterly's comment. And the governor's point is it's not enough to structure a fund, you need to capitalize it, and not with one-time revenue sources, but with ongoing revenue sources. And so, yes, he does propose utilizing the Education Endowment Fund as a vehicle, but also to establish a real estate transfer tax, so you would have a way of being able to continue to replenish that fund as you needed to draw down upon it. So I think that would be, and in response to that, rather than borrowing and using one-time monies and then needing to pay it back from a general pot, whether it's general fund or a lottery, would be to have dedicated revenue sources to be able to replenish that.
Okay. For the record, Pam Curtis from the Governor's Office of Health, Human Services, and Labor. I want to make just a couple of comments on both beer and wine and the cigarette tax proposals. First, we think that both proposals are very popular ideas with the public. We know you've seen many of the polling data that we have. We're happy to share any of that with you that you don't have. Both proposals would move Oregon, particularly the beer and wine proposal, more in line with the rest of the nation and still keep us under the rates of our surrounding states. And in the case of beer and wine, it's under the rates of all three of our surrounding neighbors. I want to encourage you to help us distinguish and help Oregonians distinguish between the price of beer and wine or cigarettes and the cost of beer and wine and cigarettes that the state bears. And you have a handout that talks about the costs of alcohol consumption, alcohol abuse, and cigarette consumption. Let me just make two highlights on those. We know that 50% of the child fatalities in our state are related to alcohol use and abuse. And we know that still 22% of the deaths in our state are related to tobacco consumption. There are many other points of statistics here for you, as well as a summary of the resources that Oregon spends and Oregon taxpayers spend in the costs of cigarette and alcohol consumption.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Okay, we'll close the public hearing. And as purposes of introduction, I'd like to introduce LC 76. LC 76 will be made available over there on the side aisle shortly. It proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to transfer $100 million from the Education Endowment Fund to the State School Fund. It refers proposed amendment to the people for their approval or rejection at the special election on the same date as the next primary election. So this is introduced on behalf of our colleagues in the Senate minority, who asks that this be introduced along with the other LC drafts. Is there further discussion to come before our committee? If not, we are not constituted as a working committee, and so if there's no other business to come before us, I would move that we stand adjourned.